half of whose board is appointed by the president. It's the most secret aspect in all of government. Think about it. The job of the CIA is to steal and to keep secrets. But we know more about the CIA than we do the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve is a private, completely unregulated bank. Talking to me now to discuss all of this, Nick Gillespie, editor-in-chief of ReasonTV.com. You were here when I spoke with Congressman Ron Paul, right, who is enthusiastic and optimistic that the audit the Fed bill may finally become law, even though a lot of garbage and nonsense may become law with it, even though some things that those of us who believe in the Constitution and the primacy of the individual and the free market may find offensive and assaulting. If this bill becomes law and the Fed truly is audited and the courts don't interfere with it and an audit takes place, you got all those ifs? What, Nicholas Gillespie, might we hope to find?
I suspect that it's more likely that the bike paths or whatever else are wrapped up in the audit the Fed bill will be passed in a way and implemented long before the actual audit of the Fed comes. I do think what is important, regardless of what actually happens, is that new attention is being paid to the Fed's role, you know, in the past 10, 15 years worth of economic issues. I mean, the Fed is definitely at the center of a lot of our economic problems, a lot of our woes. Bernanke's reappointment hearings, I think, will function not quite as good as an audit the Fed, but that should provide a backdrop for a conversation that is long overdue.
But if Congressman Paul is right, and that is the core of audit the Fed has not been watered down and is not watered down, will the Congress actually be able to send in accountants who will say, oh, in 1923 you loaned this to the King of England, and in 1927 he paid you back that, and who got the profit? I mean, are we finally going to learn what happened between 1913 and 2009 that caused the American dollar to be devalued by 92%?
The short answer is I don't think so, because I don't think that there is any way that this will go through in a way where we would have a full open book audit, because it is simply too central to the way that modern government functions. To the extent, I mean, we've talked about this in the past, to the extent that the Commerce Clause is completely elastic and the government stretches it to cover every possible activity, the Fed is even more basic in a sense, by controlling the money supply in the United States and, you know, by extension, many parts of the world. There's no way they're opening that up to sunlight.
Last week, I was filling in for Glenn Beck on his program, I think on Thursday, and I decided to explain fiat money. And what caused me to explain it, to want to explain it, was that morning AIG, the insurance company that received $85 billion from the Fed so that it could pay its creditors, many of whose former officers worked in the government, like Goldman Sachs, another story for another time, decided it wanted to pay back some of the $85 billion. Mm-hmm. And it wanted to pay it back by giving the Fed shares of stock in a corporation that it, AIG, owned, and it told the Fed it could sell those shares. So I wanted to demonstrate how funny money went out of the Fed, the $85 billion, but real money came in. So the Fed made a tremendous profit on this loan. When I got up and explained on air that the Fed literally creates money, not by running a printing press, but by adding zeros to a bank's column on the bank's ledger sheet, the emails were overwhelming, and they basically said, we believed this, we thought this, we heard this, but this is the first time we've seen it demonstrated. Question, why is it so surprising for the American public to learn that the Fed has essentially been a fraud?
Well, I would not go so far as to say that the Fed is always and everywhere a fraud, but I do think that, you know, the federal money supplier, the Fed, is kind of like the water that we as fishes swim in, and you really don't think about it until it becomes so polluted or so clogged up or so muddy that finally you realize that whatever you're swimming in is really a lot of muck.
Joining us now is Peter Schiff, the president of Euro-Pacific Capital and a candidate for the Republican nomination for the United States Senate in the Nutmeg State in Connecticut, who was a little delayed because of the elements, as lawyers say, an act of God. But Peter, welcome here. Welcome back to Freedom Watch.
Thanks for having me. In
your absence, we chatted with Congressman Ron Paul, who's extremely optimistic that his audit the Fed bill will become law, even though a lot of other horrendous assaults on the free market, on economics 101, on the Constitution, and on natural rights will become law as well. But Nick Gillespie and I were talking that even though this will be a real audit, Nick is of the view that the Fed will still find a way to keep us from learning the truth. Question to you, Peter Schiff. If the law of the land is that a real audit happens and auditors and accountants hired by the Congress go over to the Fed to look at their books, do you expect they will learn the truth?
Well, do I expect that we're going to get an honest audit out of the federal government? I mean, I think that nothing that's coming out of the federal government is honest. The numbers that they give us on inflation, on GDP, on productivity, it's all a lie. So why should I expect any more forthrightness when it comes to auditing the Fed? But at least we're going to have the pretense of auditing the Fed, it looks like.
Just as you arrived, we were talking about fiat money, something that you have educated me on, as well as a lot of people who think the way we do about the value of the dollar. And I was telling Nick Gillespie, when I explained this last week on the air, I received hundreds and hundreds of emails from people who were incredulous to learn that the Fed doesn't actually run printing presses, but effectively runs printing presses by adding zeros in its depositors' columns in the Fed's bank account. Why don't people understand that? And why don't they realize that the very act of doing that causes the cruelest tax of all, which is inflation?
Well, because the government has been very successful with this disinformation campaign to confuse the public as to what inflation means. You know, I used to say they're going to print money until they run out of ink, but now they're not limited by the supply of ink. They don't need any. They just do it electronically. And, you know, when I talk about going back to a gold standard or having, you know, real money, you know, people, my political, you know, opponents would say, oh, Peter Schiff wants to go backwards. He wants to go back to the 1970s. They want to go back to the 1770s with their fiat money. They want to repeat the Continental. You know, I think that the founding fathers were going forward to a gold standard because they understood the evils of paper money, and we're experiencing those evils right now, and unfortunately, we're going to experience them much worse in the years ahead.
We're chatting with Peter Schiff, who's the president of Euro-Pacific Capital, and Nick Gillespie, who's the editor-in-chief of Reason TV and Reason.com. Before Peter came on, we were talking about the educational benefit of an aggressive grilling of Ben Bernanke. And are you surprised that the most aggressive grillings of him came from the most conservative Republican senator on that committee, who's Jim Bunning, the Hall of Fame pitcher, who called Ben Bernanke a moral hazard and said, we should dispatch you back to Princeton, and a socialist on the floor of the United States Senate, Bernie Sanders in Vermont? Yeah. Is the antipathy towards the Fed stretching, Nick Gillespie, from one end of the political spectrum to the other?
I think that it has always been there. I mean, the suspicion of central banks or of politically manipulative banks has always come from a kind of free market on the right, as well as a socialist understanding of things on the left. They understand public choice economics. It's not a surprise that libertarian economists and socialist economists are the ones who basically develop public choice, the idea that the government works in its own interest while telling a story about helping everybody else out. I do think one of the things to pick up on what Peter was talking about, I don't think that we have an ability to use gold or anything else to restrain government spending at this point. I do think that one thing that is very useful is public outrage is the way which we'll do this. The economic crisis, Ben Bernanke's comments, the way that the government is acting and the way that it is spending, that is what's going to ultimately reel in government spending. When people educate themselves and get fed up and go to the barricades.
Peter, I don't want to debate history, Peter, but it was a Democrat, FDR, who, by the way, just as an authoritarian, declared that gold could no longer be owned or possessed or used as a means of currency, and then the Congress enacted a law to support him. And then 40 years later, a Republican, Richard Nixon, finished off what was then left of the gold standard.
Sure, but even though Roosevelt made it illegal to own gold, the dollar was still defined as a weight of gold. And so we were still on a gold standard, albeit not as good a gold standard. There was some restraint on government spending, and at least back then there was some respect for the Constitution. Now there's none. No respect for the Constitution whatsoever, and nothing to restrain government spending. I don't think outrage is going to do it. I mean, we've been outraged about the spending a long time, and it hasn't stopped it. We need real discipline in Washington, not just the public getting upset.
Well, what will it take for the public to realize that when we were on the gold standard and didn't have a central bank, put aside the 20 years of the First National Bank and the Second National Bank, those creations of Alexander Hamilton's that Andrew Jackson killed off.
Right.
The value of the dollar in those years, I'm rounding off the numbers. 1776 to 1913 when the current Fed is founded, up 13%. 1913 to 2009, down 92%. Yeah. Now, it doesn't take an economist from Princeton to understand that, does it?
And what people also don't understand is the Industrial Revolution was the most prosperous period of U.S. history, the most economic growth, no question about it, it exceeded anything of the 20th century, and we were under a gold standard the entire time.
Nick.
Here, it is over for the gold standard. I mean, it is a useful way of talking about things, but we're not going back.
All right,
to
the gold standard.
Any kind of metallic standard.
You are not saying we shouldn't go just can't happen politically.
In this case, I am more Hayekian, I suspect, than Peter in that I think the goal should be competing international currencies or competing private currencies with public currencies and whatnot. We move slightly towards that in a global economic system where it is harder now for central banks around the world to manipulate their currency any which way they want, which means they still have a lot of latitude, but not as much as they did even 20 years ago. We need to educate people because we're not going to get a gold standard without an outcry.
Why are central banks buying gold then? If what you're saying is true, why are more central banks buying gold if it's not a monetary metal? What are they doing with it?
If outrage isn't going to restrain government spending, then how are we going to get a gold standard?
Central banks have been buying gold.
What I'm saying is that it's going to be a democratic process. What we need to do is the reason we want a gold standard is basically that we want to restrain government spending and just government flouting every rule in economics and government.
Right, and even morality.
We also want a gold standard because gold is money. We need money.
All right, what is the government, the Central Bank of India, doing with the gold that it bought in the past 2 weeks, which is probably enough to fill Yankee Stadium if you had it in gold bars? What are they doing with it? For what purpose do they want it?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, they want to maintain a certain level of their currency and whatnot. Because it's money. But what I'm saying is, what are the steps that need to happen for the U.S. to go back on a gold standard? And then if the U.S. goes back on a gold standard, who will follow exactly? I'm not saying this is a bad idea. What I'm saying, I think it is not going to happen. What we can do in the breach of that is we can still exercise some kind of political discipline.
Well, remember, the thing is, the reason that foreign central banks have reserves is so their currency is backed by something. But the problem is the reserves are backed by nothing.
Right.
So now they're going back towards gold as reserves instead of paper. But the reason that all these foreign central banks had all these dollar reserves in the first place is because the dollar up until 1971 was backed by gold. Now it's not. And so central banks have to replenish their reserves with real money, which is gold, and they're already doing that.
Right,
so
Peter,
the world is already moving back to a gold standard, whether you understand it or not.
Peter, in this day and age, December 2009, as a consequence of what is happening in the United States and around the world in the past year and a half, gold is increasing in wealth with every tick of the clock. Question, are we in danger of a gold bubble? Is there such a thing as a gold bubble? Could it go from 1,500 an ounce to 500 an ounce overnight?
Well, look, we're nowhere near a gold bubble. I mean, there can certainly be a bubble in any asset class, but gold has none of the characteristics yet that would define a bubble. You know, I don't see that anywhere. If you look at the price of silver, it hasn't even made a new high yet. If there was a bubble, silver would be outperforming gold. Gold stocks are lagging. They would be leading if this was a speculative thing going on. Very few Americans own gold. It's not like the NASDAQ was or real estate where average Americans are buying gold and gold coins. That's not happening yet. That might happen at some point in the future. It hasn't happened yet. Gold's rise thus far simply reflects the loss of value of the U.S. dollar and other currencies, and the fact that current monetary and fiscal policy is going to drive the dollar's value down as far as the eye can see.
All right. Now, we talk about education. We talk about the American public learning what's going on as a consequence of Ben Bernanke's confirmation hearings.
Right.
Do you think the American public would ever come to the understanding that things like Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security are unconstitutional and therefore unlawful, even though trillions have been invested in them?
I don't know that they will come to the conclusion that they are unconstitutional. I think that they will come to the conclusion that they are ill-advised and that they do not work and that they are breaking the bank in the future for our generation, for our kids' generation, for our grandkids' generation. Mm-hmm. I have a lot less faith in the ideas that people will move based on, clearly on a kind of theoretical or moral or political ideas. It's more pragmatics. And I think we are very quickly approaching that moment.
Peter, I want to talk about Connecticut for a minute. Is there any difference between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and why are you seeking the nomination of the Republican Party?
Well, there's obviously a difference if I'm in the Republican Party, and if the Republicans nominate me, it's going to be a big difference.
If they nominate you.
There was a poll that came out today that shows me for the first time ahead of Chris Dodd. So if I can simply get the Republicans to nominate me, I'll be in the United States Senate. And that'll be a big change for the Republican Party, because I will help to change that leadership more in the direction of a traditional Republican, where government is small in every sense of the word and the Constitution reigns supreme. So hopefully the Connecticut voters will see the opportunity. You know, Chris Dodd is so unpopular right now that the Republicans can nominate a real Republican. We don't have to nominate a Democrat in Republican clothing to try to be the lesser of the two evils and try to, you know, sneak in a Republican, you know, a Democrat disguised as a Republican or a rhino. They can nominate me, and I can actually beat Chris Dodd.
Peter Schiff, thanks for joining us on Freedom Watch. I have argued in the pages of Reason magazine and other publications and here at Fox that there's just one party in the United States of America, the big government party.
Yes.
There's a Republican branch which likes war and assaults our civil liberties. There's a Democratic branch which likes taxes and wealth transfer and assaults our commercial liberties.
And now war and assaulting our civil liberties as well.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah, yeah. Do you accept that? That it almost doesn't matter who's in? It's the tenor or the tone that changes, but not the substance?
Yeah, you know, let me put it this way. If Peter Schiff runs as a Republican, he will be bringing back a Republican identity and a Republican past of a Yankee Republican, a Calvin Coolidge kind of Republicanism, which I think not just the Republican Party needs. I don't care about the Republican Party. I do care about political discourse. What we need are those voices, because I do think it's right that, you know, under Bush we had big government conservatism, under Obama we have big government liberalism. It is vanishingly hard to tell the difference between these. They are both awful. What we need is an alternative set of ideas and policies, which Schiff represents, which you represent, which the pages of Reason magazine and Reason.com and Reason.tv represent. That's what we need, a true alternative to a giant oversized party.
We are chatting with Nick Gillespie, who's the editor-in-chief of Reason TV and Reason.com. Healthcare.
Yep.
We all know that this is the road to socialism. Have you seen the healthcare proposal that the House Republicans offered? It presumes a federal role in healthcare. Yep. It orders the states to change their judicial systems to affect the way medical malpractice cases are tried in the state courts. It tells private insurers you must accept people whether they have pre-existing conditions or not. It's almost socialism light. Question to follow up what we're talking about. Is there any real difference? Or have we gotten between the parties? Or have we gotten to the point where everybody except the true libertarians and constitutionalists like you and me and most people watching and listening now think that health care is a right, not a good, and because it's a right, the government has to protect it and deliver it?
That's right. No, this is both in terms of the economic crisis as well as health care. I think what we have seen is a complete meltdown of a true Republican opposition. They had nothing to say about Bush's stimulus plan when he enacted one in 2008. They had very little to say other than a kind of Me Too-ism or a light version of Obama's stimulus. They were behind TARP. They voted for TARP. They voted for the prescription drug benefit in Medicare in the early...
They voted to take over the federalized education.
Yeah. This is a problem, and I think that the Republican Party, one of the reasons why it is vanishing before our eyes, a Rasmussen poll recently or a Gallup poll had a generic Tea Party candidate ahead of the Republican.
Right.
We don't need the Republicans anymore if all they're going to offer is a kind of watered-down version of the Democrats. And that is why there is space. There is both space for a different type of political alternative, and there's a desperate need for it. The Democrats are slack in their victory. The Republicans are completely slack in their defeat.
Now, you and I would not have been having this conversation in 1980 or 1981 when Ronald Reagan had just been elected. And admittedly, he was far more libertarian as a candidate than he was as a president. But none of this stuff going on in Washington would have been happening with him in the White House. Are we are we doomed? I mean, if Peter Schiff wins, he and Ron Paul will be one of maybe just a half dozen human beings on Capitol Hill that believe that the Constitution means what it says.
Right. Well, I like to be optimistic, especially because I think regardless of socialized medicine, we're going to live to be 100 or 200 years old. So things better get better, because otherwise we're going to be suffering for a very long time, longer than our parents did. I do think that the goal here is that we figure out ways to evacuate the political arena, not out of a sense of retreat, but because we know this is what is so frustrating about the healthcare debate. In the other 5/6 of the American economy, we have seen the way that market forces work to drive down prices, to increase productivity, to increase the quality of goods and services available, the range of things available. People say in medicine somehow that it, you know, these normal laws of economics, of supply and demand, of consumer wants and producer production don't apply. That's completely wrong. And what we need to be doing, the places where Americans are most frustrated are health, education, and retirement. It is not a coincidence that those are the three places that the government runs riot over, over private industry.
We're chatting with Nick Gillespie, editor-in-chief of Reason TV and Reason.com. Last question. What is the relevance today of the free market, constitutionalist, libertarian views that you and I and Ron Paul and Peter Schiff have? And what can people who have those views do if the only choice is between a big government Democrat and a big government Republican?
Right. You know, they have all the options in the world. You know, the greatest one is what Camus or perhaps Bartleby the Scrivener and Herman Melville's story. They can prefer not to vote. They can opt out of voting. But I think an equally constructive point of view is to support candidates and to insist on candidates who actually offer an alternative, somebody like a Peter Schiff, somebody like a Ron Paul. Ron Paul is wildly popular. He has never, you know, he was not a best-selling New York Times author when he was running as the LP candidate, the Libertarian Party candidate for president in 1988. His ideas are on the cusp of becoming not just popular but mainstream, because we have seen the past in the first decade of the 21st century. We have seen the past under George Bush and Barack Obama, a return to 1970s policies of LBJ and Richard Nixon and Jimmy Carter. Those didn't work then. They're not working now. People want a true market-based alternative that privileges human freedom and individual liberty.
Nick Gillespie, it's been a pleasure. Come visit us again when next you're in New York.
Certainly hope to.
Thank you. You can catch today's show on foxnews.com/freedomwatch and on Sirius 145, XM 168, or online at foxnewstalk.com at 6 p.m. Eastern on Saturdays. From New York, defending freedom. Until the next time, stay free, America.